Hello, 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 and welcome to the Jolly Heretic. Now, J.F. Gariepy, who, as you may know, has been on my show a number of times and I've been on his, has put out a very interesting tweet in which he notes that if you, as a white person, have a child by a sub-Saharan African, then you are about as related to your own child as you would be to a random member of your white population. And this is extremely interesting, and I want to look at how this conclusion can be reached. Before I do so, could you please, please, please subscribe? Could you subscribe here and also on my Substack, jollyheretic.com, where I put in-person interviews and all kinds of fascinating base stuff I don't put here, and where, if you like what I do, you can support me for as little as the cost of a pint of beer a month. Right, back to the video. So, how does this work? Well, there's a very interesting book which I encourage you to read called On Genetic Interests by Frank Salter, in which he looks at the mathematics behind this. So, in essence, two random English people are 12th cousins. This means that they have a common ancestor about 500 years ago. You can quantify how related different ethnic groups are in terms of cousinness. So, for example, if you were to divide the world between just English people and just Danish people, then two random English people would become the equivalent of something like seventh cousins, the equivalent. Because based on the genetic distance from Danes, which is not large, then they would be more related to each other than they would be to a random Dane. So consequently, they would be something like seventh cousins, which implies a common ancestor in perhaps 1700, something along those lines. The bigger the genetic distances between the populations, then of course the more closely related two random people of the same ethnic group become in relation to another ethnic group. So if we look at it in terms of the relationship between two random English people and two Bantu, if the world is just English people and Bantu, i.e. Western sub-Saharan Africans, then the relationship between two English people becomes essentially brother and sister, not seventh cousin, brother and sister, or even twins, somewhere between the two, because that is how large the genetic distance is. As a consequence, you can calculate how much damage it will do to you to breed in terms of genetic interest, in terms of passing on more of your genes, how much damage it will do to your genetic interests by breeding exogamously. So, if you were in a situation where you could choose, to, as an English person, to have a child with a sub-Saharan African or have a child with another English person, then having a child with another English person would increase your genetic interests, i.e. increase the percent of your genes passed on, by 92%. And if that was with something even more distant, such as an Australian Aboriginal, then it would be perhaps 100%. So this then allows you to quantify what is going on. And it explains why people tend to marry endogamously. It's genetic similarity theory. We want to pass on more of our genes. We want to pass on as many of our genes as we can. We don't want to have a child with someone that's too genetically similar to us, because this will cause inbreeding depression. This will cause double doses of mutant genes. It will cause a sickly child. But we don't want to breed with a person that's too distant from us, because then we will pass on fewer of our genes than we otherwise could. So we tend to go, there was a research in Iceland on this, we tend to go for our third cousin or the genetic equivalent thereof, i.e. a couple of percent above the baseline of the population. And that can be a literal third cousin, or it can be a third or fourth or fifth, but around that area, or it can be a person that just by genetic chance has that level of genetic commonality with oneself. Now, there are some people who are inclined to outbreed. This is not a random sample of the population. There are studies on this by a guy called Seb Jensen, for example, very interesting study, which show that people who tend towards outbreeding, exogamous relationships, tend to be what we would call fast life history strategists, i.e. they are evolved to environment of live fast, die young, plentiful but unstable. In that kind of ecology, precisely because it's unstable and you could be wiped out at any moment, you should be attracted to genetic distance, because a person that is genetically dissimilar from you may have some useful adaptation that could help. Who knows? And also, the kind of people that survive in that unstable, unpredictable ecology are going to be people that are physically tough, people that are aggressive, people that are basically fast life history strategists. And so what you will go for in that sense is what's called hybrid vigour. I.e. a person who, if you outbreed, there's fewer double doses, and you end up with a person who, in that sense, can be genetically more healthy and more likely to survive in a highly unstable ecology. Once the environment is stable and predictable, then you need to be adapted to that environment. You need to be adapted to the kinds of diseases that are in that environment. You need to be evolved for that environment. So obviously, therefore, you need to go with someone who is genetically similar to you, such that the gene complexes that allow you to be resistant to local diseases, things like this, are not broken up. Also, in that kind of ecology, if it's harsh and stable, then you need to invest more bioenergetic resources in your offspring to ensure that they're going to survive. So you need to have fewer offspring, and you need to invest more resources in them. You're more likely to do that. You're more likely to bond with them, as genetic similarity theory would predict, if you are genetically close to them. So therefore, you have a small number of offspring, and you invest a great deal in them, and you bond with them strongly. They are strongly related to you, you are passing on more of your genes. If you outbreed, then the only way that you can pass on the equivalent number of genes is obviously to have more children, to have lots of children. And you will inherently invest less in them, and they'll be less likely to survive. So therefore, outbreeding can only work in an easy, unstable ecology in which you can therefore have loads and loads and loads of kids and not invest much in them. In an ecology in which, in order to survive, you have to invest resources in them, and so you have to have a small number of children, it pays to have offspring with someone who is genetically close to you. So that's basically the essence of the situation, and that's why, and there are studies, by the way, that indicate that people that are mixed race are elevated compared to either parent race, black and white, for example, in violent behaviour, in mental instability, in depression, in anxiety, that sort of thing. Now, one thing that would explain that is that those tend to be fast life history strategy traits, and they've just been inherited from the parents, because the parents are fast life history strategists, and that's passed on to the children. Another thing that might explain it would be some sort of stress by virtue of not being one race or the other. That's possible. A third thing that would explain it would be that genetic you're forcing alleles to work together that aren't used to working together, and in polygenic traits, delicate traits such as those related to the mind, this causes unpredictable results and things not to work as efficiently. So that's the essence of this sort of situation. And so in answer to his question, I got ChatGPT to look at this, and when I told ChatGPT that I was talking about a white person and a Bantu, then it would kind of admit that you, as a father of a half black, half white child, you would be 13th cousin or less to your child. But then when I asked it to give me the precise level of consanguinity, it basically refused to do so, and it kept insisting, "Oh no, well, parents are always 50% the same as their children." And so then I changed tack and I stopped using race, and I just said, "Well, look, European people are split from what is now the African population 198,000 years ago. And if we assume 30 years to a generation, that's 6,600 generations, which will make a random English person and a random sub-Saharan African 6,559th cousins, whereas two random English people would be 12th cousins. On that basis, with those numbers, it concluded that if you have if an English person has a child with a sub-Saharan African woman, then he will be no more related to his own child than he will be to the baseline of the population, i.e. to a random English person. And therefore, the only way that you can successfully pass on your genes, i.e. replicate yourself, if you do in that context, genetically, is to have lots and lots and lots of children. And inherently, the more children you have, the less resources you can invest in each. So that is a fast life history strategy decision. Now, were you to have a child as an English person with a Dane, then the genetic loss would be minimal, and could be more than compensated for by other factors, health or whatever it happens to be. But with someone that genetically distant, the genetic loss is enormous, and you are no more related to your own child than you are to a random member of the population, of your own population. This would mean, this would predict that you would invest fewer resources in such a child, you would be less bonded to such a child, and you would simply have to have more of them. So it really is a very fascinating area, which I urge you to look into more by reading Frank Saul's book on genetic interests.
Are you ready for the future of the West?